Heard the call to build your small business? Make it happen with a .net domain name, the place for dreamers for 30 years and counting. Visit keepdreamingup.net for tips and advice, whether you're just getting started or looking to grow. That's keepdreamingup.net.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, DJ Foster. I am joined tonight by Andrew Hahn. Andrew, how's it going, man? Oh. Okay. Ukuleles?
Hey.
Is that your signature intro now?
I'm contractually obligated. I don't know if you know this, but I have a sponsorship deal with the Ukulele Association of America, or as they call it, the UA. And I must appear on all podcasts to ukulele music, and
seems fair.
I have to have no less than 3 ukulele spots in every appearance.
I feel like that's better than the ads that I read on the show sometimes. Just you know, random ukulele interludes.
If you want me to hook you up with them, I can. I'm really tight with the Ukulele Association of America. The Ukulele Association of America, it's like a guitar, but smaller.
Yeah. How well do they pay? Like, not a lot, but smaller?
Well, they pay in ukuleles, so it's tough.
Seems like
tough. I don't know what I have 4 already.
Seems like a really weird business model, Andrew. I'm not going to lie to you.
But, you know, I'm just waiting for the market to turn. It's it's a buyer's market right now, but eventually it's like markets are cyclical. It's going to be a seller's market, and who's going to have all the ukuleles?
It's going to be you.
Gonna be me.
Well, good to hear that things are going well for you then.
Yeah.
Hey, did you watch the Clippers game tonight?
I did in fact watch the Clippers game.
You called this blowout, you little weirdo, you.
Well, unfortunately, there's nowhere I can point to that proves I called this blowout. The only evidence I have is Jordan Heimer, who watched the first half with me,
and he's barely a reliable
He's
witness.
Incredibly unreliable.
Yeah, for sure.
If you ever get arrested for something and you need an alibi or some kind of credible character witness, and you bring Jordan Heimer on the staff on the stand, the police, the prosecutors will just laugh and be like, "This is not a plan that's going
to
work."
Who's the first person you would call if you went to jail?
The first person I would call if I went to jail.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a tough one. I feel like you got to have this in mind, because when you're in jail, you're probably not in a really like good thinking space. So you kind of got to plan ahead.
You know what? I do know who it would be.
Who would it be?
Because these are the types of things that I think about. I'm not going to say the names in person, but let me explain what the keys are to the person that you would call.
Okay.
They have to be relatively close to where you live.
Right.
So like within your city limits, because someone outside of the city, they're not going to be able to do much. And you have to know that they have a relatively large cash reserve that they can get hands on 24 hours a day.
That's true.
Like, you know, at least 4 figures and up. Because if you have a bond that has to be paid and you have to get bailed out of jail, things of that nature, you know, you don't really want to wait there till morning when someone has to, like, go to the bank and get cash.
It's true. You don't.
Those
are
a few things. So I have 2 people that I can call in those instances. I'm always paranoid of those kinds of situations, despite the fact that I've never been arrested. I've never had any trouble with the law.
You gotta stay ready.
It's like love. It only takes one time for it to change your life forever.
Was that romantic advice? Are you spoiling the end of the show with early romantic advice? Is this bonus ukuleles again? What is happening? Why is this happening?
So yeah, that's how I feel.
Okay, Andrew, 116-92, Clippers win, a resounding victory. What was different? What was the big change from everyone was kind of freaking out over the last few games, the offense looking terrible, and then everything sort of came together tonight. What's the difference? Is it something simple? Is it more complex? What do you think?
They made shots.
Yeah, I thought you were going to go in that direction.
It's about they made shots. They made an effort to, excluding the first 2.5 minutes where it seemed like they were not prepared to play at all. When the Spurs went out on an 8-0 lead very early in the game, the Clippers had that look of like, oh, we're playing in San Antonio. And this is a completely different game than the one that we were playing the night before. I think Redick had made a comment about that at halftime, just saying that the pace was totally different and they needed a minute to regroup and just realize that this is not the Memphis Grizzlies. They're not playing a slowdown game or anything like that.
Right.
And once they got their bearings, you could see that a lot of the players were running. Blake, in the first half especially, was pushing the pace in transition, trying to get a lot of early offense going.
Uh-huh.
I think, and some will say that this is biased here, but I think Luke was the difference in the first half.
Oh, boy.
He made two corner threes.
He did.
Couple of cuts to the basket. He made easy layups, a dunk, I think.
I think he had 10 in the first quarter, which is, like, absurd for Luke.
Yeah, I think he has a season high.
It was a season high, yeah. First time in double digits this year.
Would it shock you if they said it was, like, a Clipper high of 13?
A Clipper high?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for Luke's career.
Yeah. It would shock me if it was a career high.
Clippers,
but career.
that would shock me. But in his tenure with the Clippers, like, if you said that the most he had scored was 13, that seems plausible.
It definitely does. Yeah, it does.
But I think Luke was the difference in the first half.
You would say that.
I don't know what else to say.
I feel like the 8-0 run by the Spurs to start the game kind of, like, woke him up. The Clippers were 39-16 after that to end the first quarter. 39-16 after that little run.
Right. I think immediately after the timeout, it was an 18-2 run.
Yeah, it was like, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
We're here to play. I loved the pace that the Clippers played with tonight.
It almost felt like they tired themselves out.
Which is great. That's fine. Yeah. If you get a 20-point lead, you can do that.
In the third quarter, I felt that creeping anxiety come in where they started to slow down and it looked like they didn't quite want to run as much as they were going to.
Right.
And it's like, oh, did they run out of steam? Because even though they had a minutes-wise a relatively light game the night before Memphis, it's still a back-to-back. It's still in San Antonio.
Right.
You don't want to leave any door open for Pop and the Spurs. It's weird for me to jump straight into criticisms because it's such a massive win for the Clippers.
Yeah, don't do that.
But I kind of want to.
Okay, go ahead. Is this a compliment sandwich?
No, because there's going to be no compliment that comes.
Oh, it's just a straight insult, Patty?
It's an open-faced compliment sandwich.
Okay, sure.
And here we go. I kind of would have... So in this game, Doc went with Luke a little bit longer in the game than he typically does.
It's about Luke again.
Bamute had 24 minutes. I think he usually averages like 18, 19 minutes. And in the first quarter specifically, he left Blake and Chris in there longer than normal. He's been kind of pulling one out a little bit earlier than the other one, mm-hmm. trying to stagger their minutes just a couple of minutes in the first half so that the second unit isn't out there by themselves for more than 2 or 3 minutes. And he didn't quite do that this time. He let them run right around until the 2 minute mark of the first quarter, then pulled them both out. And then they didn't come back in until about the 8 minute mark of the second quarter. And it almost felt like Popovich was prepared for that because he pulled Kawhi a little bit early in the first quarter and put him back very early in the second, and Kawhi really beat up on the second unit.
I noticed that, too.
And that's when that double-digit lead really shrank back down, and then it felt like, oh, of course, it's a game of runs, and the Spurs are going to get back into this. But then Doc called a timeout, put Luke in, put Chris, put Blake, put them all back in, and they started, like, push that lead back up again. But it felt like they were right at the precipice of being able to turn that, like, 15, 16-point lead into, like, a 25, 26-point lead by the start of the third quarter, and that didn't happen until, like, midway through the fourth quarter.
So you're disappointed they didn't win by 50, is what you're saying.
Yeah, so not quite that, but and not to just cannibalize all the conversations I had earlier in the day, but it's certainly easy to say it to just do that and recycle material that other people haven't heard, because I only have so many original thoughts in a day.
Sure.
Might as well just use them over and over again. I don't really care about whether the Clippers are doing better or worse relative to the competition for the evening or the competition in the Western Conference. I care purely about whether the Clippers are doing the best relative to what I think they can do.
Mm.
Potential is not something that's contextual against someone else. It was like, oh, well, the Clippers are shooting 90% from the three-point line. Isn't that great? That's amazing, because everyone else is only shooting 40% is supposed to be really good. Well, but if I think that the Clippers are good enough to shoot 95%, then it's fine. They can do 5%. They can be 5% better, and that's really what I feel like when I'm watching, not just the Clippers, but any team's play.
You've defended that viewpoint very well.
Thank you.
That was a good recovery by you.
I appreciate that.
I was ready to grill you, and now I'm like, okay, that makes sense.
The pursuit of perfection and the pursuit of greatness is contained entirely within yourself. It's not something that you do so in comparison to others.
Word.
Yeah.
That's pretty deep, man. You've come a long way from ukuleles.
Seems like a great time for me to plug my sponsors again, the Ukulele Association of America.
Sure, yep. Also, the Clippers podcast. You want to tell our listeners about the Clippers podcast? They may not know.
No, I don't want to do that. Let's talk about Lockdown Clippers.
No, come on. No, it's cross promotion.
No, we don't.
No, we're all in the same family. It's me, you, and Jordan. Come on.
I don't really want to be in the same family as Jordan.
Then you picked a terrible co-host.
I don't make good decisions
when you're around Jordan. Well, that's true. That's very hard to argue.
Back to this game.
Do you know what I think the biggest difference was tonight?
What was the biggest difference?
I thought that finally the Clippers turned their great defense into offense. Like, they had been playing great defense, getting stops and forcing bad shots, but it wasn't translating into quick offense on the other end. Tonight, okay, there were a bunch of positions in that first quarter where a shot would go up, a contested jumper would go up, and the bigs would almost start sprinting and running their lanes, like, immediately. And the wings were leaking out, and Chris was left to collect these long rebounds and just go. Like, I couldn't count on two hands, maybe not even my toes, how many times Blake Griffin beat LaMarcus Aldridge and Pau Gasol up the floor in that first quarter. It was just like they were off to the races as soon as they got a defensive rebound. And it's like, yeah, if you're forcing teams to shoot 37% from the field and getting all these turnovers, that should translate into easy layups, easy mismatches. There were so many times tonight in the first half where the Clippers would rush it up the court, and even if they didn't get something good on the initial action, oh, look, Patty Mills is covering Blake Griffin now. Or, Pau Gasol is stuck on Chris Paul and he's going to nutmeg him. Like, just by pushing and forcing this crazy, like, frenetic sort of pace, it put San Antonio in these weird cross matches that they had no idea how to handle once they got there.
Yeah, and LaMarcus Aldridge and Pau Gasol are not the most notable big men defenders in the league, and that's part of the reason why I thought that the Clippers would do so well against them. I think the Spurs are a good team. They're a really good team. If they win 55 games, there would be zero surprise for me, and any team that wins over 50 games is a good team in this league. But I just feel like the Clippers are a bad matchup for the Spurs because their starting lineup is not optimally suited against the Clippers. And the real strength of San Antonio over the past few years is that they bring in a second unit that can sustain the level of intensity and pace in the game. And the Clippers' bench this year is much improved. And that really mitigates that advantage that the Spurs had over them the past few years. I don't know if this is true or not, and maybe you can recall off the top of your head, but some people were suggesting that Kawhi Leonard would be a real problem for the Clippers.
Yeah.
And in the past, I remember Kawhi definitely being a problem in terms of his defensive ability. There are very few players in the league I feel like can really put the clamps on Chris Paul, and Kawhi is one of those few. I remember, like, I think it was the first season that Chris was with the Clippers. Kawhi was guarding him late in a very, very tight game. I think it was like a 1 or 2 point game. Chris had the ball with like under 2 minutes to go, and Chris never turns the ball over at the top of the key, and it was one-on-one, and he tried to put a crossover on Kawhi, and I guess like didn't realize his wingspan and just his hand size, and like Kawhi just tipped the ball out,
yeah,
caused a turnover, I think, and like you could see like the stunned look on Chris's face that Kawhi was able to do that. But offensively, I don't feel like Kawhi has ever really shown a consistent level of explosion against the Clippers.
Right.
And so, to me, it's one of those things where the Clippers can leverage their athleticism to bend the Spurs defense enough, especially a Spurs defense that isn't what it was in years past. And then, in terms of offense, the Clippers are, in terms of defense, the Clippers are much more consistent rolling over their top five defense from last season. And the Spurs don't really have the same level of system players to kind of get those easy looks for them. And if they're going to rely on Kawhi to do that, that's not necessarily what he would like to do on a night-in, night-out basis.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, you know, just watching this game, a similar thought kind of came across from me when I was watching that. The Spurs beat a lot of teams because they're so much smarter and they have so much more basketball IQ than the opponent they're playing against, but there becomes a point where it's really tough to overcome such a big athleticism advantage. Like, you can be smart and you can make great heady plays all you want, but it's almost how I feel when I play against, like, 20-year-old kids now. I'm like, yeah, I know so many more tricks than them, and I have, like, all this built-up experience playing, and they're just young, and I can trick them and do all this. And it works for a little bit, but eventually the athleticism is going to win out. And now when I watch the Clippers and Spurs play, I'm always just kind of waiting for, okay, like, eventually this athleticism advantage is going to be too much to overcome. And I think that's kind of why the Clippers have had so much success against the Spurs lately.
Now that we're done patting ourselves on the back, talking about how much... how obvious it was the advantage that the Clippers had. Would you have been surprised at all if the Spurs just crushed them, if the score was reversed?
Of course not. A road back-to-back in San Antonio? Of course not.
So despite all the praise that we're throwing the Clippers' direction and the seeming amount of shade that we're sending the Spurs' way, it's just as easy. It could have been the other way around.
It's true. I just love that the defense finally translated into offense, I think. Yeah, guys were making shots that a lot of them had no business making. Looking at you, Luke.
looking at me.
Looking at you, Andrew. Looking at Luke. And JJ finally got going, and that helped. I think it's foolish to think it's just that the shots were falling. I think, like you said, and like I said, the Clippers pushing the pace really kind of changed this game and gave him the win. Who's your MVP for tonight?
MVP goes to Luke Bamute, despite the fact that Blake had a monster game.
Why did I even ask?
Because Kawhi was starting to develop some rhythm in the game early in the second quarter, and you know Doc's rotation. Luke is
the stopper.
Amount of burn in the first quarter, and then he sits the rest of the half. And Luke came back in the second quarter to try and slow down Kawhi, which I think he did successfully. Kawhi finished 3 of 13.
Yeah, he didn't do anything.
Game. Like 14 points on 13 shots. That's, if you can get that out of Kawhi, who I think is a very credible MVP candidate this year.
Yeah.
That's a terrific job by Luke, who isn't the most athletic guy in the world, but is incredibly smart. And I genuinely feel like the reason why DeAndre's defensive numbers improved last season, the reason why the defense is so much better this season, is because Luke is just like, much in the same way that we say that Redick is a really good team defender, he knows the rotations to make and which way to funnel guys, despite the fact that he's generally on the losing end of an athleticism battle on a nightly basis.
Yeah.
Luke is just a more elevated version of that, where he has more size, he has more length, he's a little bit more athletic, but he's still just as intelligent about all of that. And that makes DeAndre's life so much easier. There is one play I was thinking about in particular where Blake had called out to Luke to switch between Kawhi and LaMarcus Aldridge, and then LaMarcus puts him on the block and tries to post up Luke, and Luke stands his ground. And one thing Aldridge loves to do is like make that little spin move towards the baseline and put up a fadeaway jumper.
Yeah.
And Luke kept on trying to funnel him towards the middle until Aldridge took the bait and went towards the middle. And that's pushing the player towards your help defense. DeAndre came over and blocked the shot. Now, of course, if DeAndre doesn't make that help rotation, Aldridge has a clear lane to the basket and just dunks it, and everyone looks foolish. But those are like the
little plays, yeah, sure.
The little plays that over time accumulate, and if there's a trust that that's going to happen, and if DeAndre trusts that Luke is going to send the guy the right direction, then they'll make those rotations. It's accumulated knowledge. It's fitting that they're playing the Spurs, because the Spurs call it corporate knowledge.
Yeah.
The things that build up over time. This is accumulated knowledge that you're seeing the Clippers build up.
I'm going to name your next ukulele. We're going to call it the Lukulele.
Oh, I like it.
Do you like it?
I like it.
Blake Griffin's my MVP because 28 points in 29 minutes, and this helps in the MVP race over Kawhi, is my hot take.
Yeah, DeAndre's the only one to play 30 minutes tonight. This is a great trend for the Clippers. I feel like a team that was certainly snake bitten by injuries last season,
mm-hmm.
and guys that are creeping up towards the older end of the spectrum, you want to keep those guys as fresh and preserved for as long as possible if they want to make a serious playoff run. Chris has 29 minutes. JJ's only 24.
Yeah, it's ideal.
Yeah, it's a really solid distribution of minutes for the players, I think.
Just go up by 25 every night. Problem solved.
So easy.
So easy. All right, so I put the call out to my Twitter followers and ask them what's the worst romantic advice they've ever received.
Okay, here's a little music for that.
Okay. Yeah, this feels romantic. Wow. Wide range of notes on the ukulele. Ukulele is a lot more versatile than I thought.
I don't know if that's a ukulele. That might be a guitar.
That sounded like a guitar.
Yeah, it's...
We'll have to ask the association.
Like they said, it's just a smaller guitar.
So you're famous for your late night romantic advice.
Once upon a time.
It's kind of what you did for a while there.
I thought about how do I distinguish myself in a marketplace full of people that are awake by themselves.
And clearly need romantic advice.
Clearly need romantic advice.
Yeah.
And I said,
you're a man of the people.
It's going to work for someone.
And we'll see if it did. So I asked the followers for the worst romantic advice I ever get. Nick Flint says, just be yourself. And then he says, you need to add a canned laugh track after that. Because presumably Nick is insinuating that just be yourself is the very worst romantic advice possible. Which I kind of agree with.
Oh, I think...
being yourself is a sucker move.
Well, but if yourself, you mean someone better.
Yeah, you have to be like the ideal version of yourself.
Right. Just be the best version of you.
So
not
so,
difficult.
So don't be yourself, basically.
Just, yeah.
Yeah. Try and be what you would want to be if you weren't so worthless.
Wait, what are we doing here again? Are people giving us romantic advice?
Oh, people are telling us what the worst romantic advice they've ever received is.
Oh, the worst romantic advice they've ever received.
John C. Holmes says everything that Andrew Hahn tweets at around 3 a.m. Oh.
Those are the worst?
He said that's the worst. Everything that you tweet around 3 a.m. He's not a fan.
It's a hard one to swallow.
That's tough. Here's one. Eric says, ask her what she's looking for in the relationship, was the advice. And he says, I did. We had different visions, and we broke up during the conversation.
Oof. That's a tough one.
Yeah, I think we both oofed at the same time.
Ooh, yeah.
Hey, but you know what? It's probably for the best, right?
Is it?
I think so. I would say so. If you have different visions and just a conversation like that led to a breakup, like, man, you just saved yourself a few months of potential misery.
Well, it's easy for you to say as a newly married individual. You don't know what it's like to not have a significant other for any stretch of time.
Well, it's
been an especially long time since you have been single.
It has, but I spent a large portion of my life very single, extremely single.
It feels a little disingenuous for you to sit there and be like, you really dodged a bullet and you're better off being single as I sit here with my long-term girlfriend turned fiancé, now wife.
Not fair.
Laughing in the comforts of my home.
See, that's just not fair.
I think it's very fair. That's what have I said that's not true?
Do you like, so if you go to therapy, are you like, oh, well, let me know about your life because I don't know if I can trust this advice. Like, how's your relationship with your dad? That's not a thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as someone that has gone to therapy in the past, I have done that.
You called the therapist out?
You have to know who you're talking to.
Like,
you know,
I mean, I guess
it's very similar to dating. You got to learn about each other.
That can't be right. Therapy can't be similar to dating.
Anyone that has gone to therapy and hasn't done that.
Are you dating your therapist? You're
what's
not.
The next question.
You're not dating your therapist.
All I know is that I have been to therapy in the past and I may or may not have been dating that therapist.
Wow. I learn something new about you every day. You know that? Because I know literally nothing about you because you're the most secretive person I've ever met.
Well, you know, I'm an open book for those that are willing to read.
That doesn't even sound like a real thing. And that's all I got for the romantic advice. So it seems like my followers are doing pretty good in the romantic category. Do you have any advice for them? Is there anything specifically you want to share with them?
What advice do I have for the listeners of the Locked On Clippers?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, I feel like they could use it. You know, everyone can use a little romantic advice every now and then.
I think if they... So here's a real bit of advice.
Not romantic?
It is romantic.
Oh, real romantic advice.
Real
okay.
romantic advice. I think this is a genuine thing. If you can sit next to in front of someone, so you're both sitting in front of each other.
Yeah.
Knees touching.
Knees touching.
And you look at them for 5 minutes. You look at their face. Don't make weird faces. Don't try and poke each other or say something. Just look at the person and say nothing for 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
There's a huge level of awkwardness and discomfort that starts at the beginning, and if you get through it...
Is it because your knees are touching?
I think it's just because it's unusual to just stare at someone. Or sitting directly in front of someone and not do anything.
Yeah.
Not have some kind of defensive mechanism come out to try and deflect from any flaws that the other person may perceive. It'll subtly break down a lot of walls, and you may be able to develop intimacy faster.
Hmm.
That's one trick to try.
Is this a thing that you do, like, early on?
If you can convince the other person to do it, it's a very interesting experience early on, I think.
Yeah, I feel like I would get self-conscious in, like, the first, like, 5 seconds.
Yeah, it'll put you in that uncomfortable zone, like, almost immediately, and then that's when things start to get real.
I just already live in that uncomfortable zone, so I don't need that. I don't know that I need to enforce it on other people.
here's a little more fun piece of romantic advice.
Okay.
That is also true, but not advisable. Trauma really bonds people together.
Oh my God.
So if you're on a first date and you really like this person and you want it to go places, you can simulate a mugging or a robbery and just really scare the daylights out of the person. And then regardless of how well or how poorly that date went, that trauma is going to bind you guys together. And 6 months to a year later, you'll be planning your wedding. You'll be engaged. You'll be talking about your future together. All thanks to that hired fake mugger that I certainly did not advise you to do.
Wow.
Podcast.
Your advice is stare at the person for 5 minutes without saying anything and then have them be fake mugged?
It's, you know, it may or may not have worked in the past.
It's a little... I fear for anyone who listens to you now.
I may or may not be the proud owner of several promising but ultimately failed relationships.
You know what, though? One day you're going to find that special lady who's going to also set up a fake mugging, and then you'll have the dual mug situation, and that just seems like the start of a beautiful relationship to me.
I'll be wise to that. I'll just, what's going on here?
You'll shut that down.
Did she put you up to this? I'm not falling for it.
I love that. Anytime anyone comes up to you in a mugging situation, now you're going to think that someone put them up to it. That's almost like more disarming than anything else you could do in a mugging situation. Like, do you know Carol? Oh, Carol, always fake mugging me. You're the worst.
Who's Carol?
Carol's your hypothetical date here. Let's just move on. I asked people for also questions for the show, so let's get to those. Now that the Clippers' offense and Blake is back for now, do you think the defense they have played can be sustained like this for a whole season? Basically, do you think the Clippers can be this good defensively for the whole season? That's from Ed Sanchez.
Well, do you?
I don't. I think they're going to take a little step back. I could see them being a top 10 defense, and I think I said that earlier this offseason, that they should pretty comfortably finish in the top 10. But I think the bench is eventually going to have some issues defending. So I could see them probably coming around 6th, 7th, something in that area in defensive efficiency in the league. What do you think?
I would agree with the bench potentially having problems as far as Blake is concerned. I do feel like Blake is certainly capable of playing good defense, and we all saw it 2 playoff series ago when the Clippers defeated the Spurs in a 7-game series, and Blake just looked like an absolute monster.
Yeah,
offensively and defensively. In that series, it looked like he was expending a lot of energy to do that as well. But this year, it feels like he just is more focused on the defensive end. He's not necessarily leaking out as often on plays when guys go by him. He's not just hanging out on the perimeter. He's going to pinch down towards the elbows or towards the post and come back in for the rebound. He's going to make those second and third rotations. It doesn't necessarily look like he's trying harder, because I don't want it to seem like an effort issue.
Yeah.
But it just seems like he's more disciplined about it, and I feel like that's making a big difference as far as the starting unit defense goes.
I would agree with that. I think Blake has been noticeably better defensively these first few games than what we've seen from him in the past. And I think it's just something that had to happen as he got more experienced and kind of figured out, I can't just be, you know, one trick pony anymore. Because early in his career, he was a real, real, real bad defender. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. I think the feeling was that he was never going to be a plus defender, but at least maybe he could be neutral.
Yeah.
And I think this season so far, he's starting to...
I think he looks like more of a plus defender than a neutral defender so far this year. Yeah.
That's what I was just about to say. I agree.
Huh. Well, good job, Blake. And then last question here. Oh, wait, 2 more. Your old friend Whammy Giveaway.
Oh, Whammy.
Whammy. He asks, how much do you think the fear of losing has motivated Chris Paul and Blake Griffin to win this year?
Zero.
Zero?
I would say zero, because the fear of losing is probably there every year. There's no reason why it would be any more palpable now, especially with, on paper, a roster that looks to be one of the best in NBA history being assembled. I'm talking about the Golden State Warriors with Durant and Steph Curry.
They're pretty good.
So
I'm going to say my answer is non-zero, but not specify what the non-zero number is. I just like the term non-zero.
Non-zero on a scale of A to Z.
Yep, exactly. What's the likely date for the Clippers championship parade? Kevin needs to book airline tickets.
Championship parades. Let's see here. Lately, the playoffs have been starting, last week of May and into June?
Mm-hmm.
I think that Game 7 ended up being the June 24th of last year. And the draft tends to be on anywhere from the 27th to 29th of June. So the parade is probably going to be, Wednesday the 28th? So Wednesday the 28th, Kevin.
Just get it off of work now.
Just start building up those vacation days.
Hey, I have an idea. Let's commit to do something crazy if the Clippers win the championship.
Like what?
Like something insane. Like, I'll shave LAC, the old LAC logo, into the back of my head.
Okay, you can shave the old LAC logo. What? Make it the new one.
No.
I mean, not the one that says Clippers, but the one with the cheesy explanation of, C surrounding the LA.
Ugh, that one seems hard.
The explanation is bad, but the logo itself, I appreciate. It reminds me of the old Cubs look, a 70s version of the Cubs logo.
Are you a black jersey guy? I love the black jerseys.
I do not. I have no opinion about the black jerseys.
I mean, comparatively to the other jerseys, I think it's far superior.
Okay, so here's the hot take as far as Clipper jerseys goes.
Okay.
I'm in the very small minority that likes the red jerseys.
Oh.
The ones with the logo on one side.
And no, those are terrible.
I like the asymmetry of it, or the balance of the logo and the number. I don't know what it is, but I like those jerseys.
Yeah, you're wrong.
The players hate those jerseys.
Those are objectively bad.
I like them.
All right. Well, so what are you gonna do? I'll tattoo something or get the head shaved. I don't know. Do you think? What if I got a tattoo? That would be cool. I don't have any tattoos.
Yeah. Well, how about you get a tattoo of the Clippers logo?
The little LAC tattoo?
Yeah.
If they win the championship this year? I'll commit to that.
Get a tattoo.
I'll commit to that. If the Clippers win the championship this year, I will get an LAC tattoo. You can tweet that. You can write it down. I'll do it. Clippers win the championship, an LAC tattoo goes on my body.
There you go.
What are you doing?
I'm not doing anything.
Nothing?
No.
You're not going to contribute at all to this?
Here's what I will do. I will try to steal a championship ring.
that's good.
That's what I'm going
to
do.
That's good enough. You have to steal it from, DeAndre or Mo Spates, though. Someone clearly physically superior to you.
You will see an Asian individual at some point after the title trying to steal one of their rings, allegedly. You heard it here first.
Allegedly.
There was a non-illegal promise of theft that's going to happen.
All right, I guess that's good enough. I guess the worst thing that could happen for me is that I get a poorly done tattoo or deal with a rash for a little bit. You could legit get your face smashed though.
So no.
You're taking on a bigger, bigger danger, I suppose.
I mean, you've never noticed anything I've stolen from you.
What have you stolen from me?
What?
You've stolen my dignity, I think is what you've stolen. Andrew, that's it. We're wrapping it up. Who was your favorite wrestler growing up?
My favorite wrestler growing up?
Yeah.
I liked the Attitude Era with Stone Cold.
Okay. That's all you need to say. That's all you need to say. I'm going to outro us out of here.
I need my third... I need my third ukulele appearance.
Oh. That sounds more like a ukulele. Well, now you've satisfied all of your ukulele spots.
I'm getting that cool ukulele money.
That good ukulele money. All right. We're going to head on out of here. If you listen to this on Saturday night, good job. If you listen to this Monday morning, also good job. We'll be back most likely Monday night, possibly Tuesday.
DJ,
yeah, what's up?
I just wanted to interrupt your outro.
Oh, no, you can't phase me. For interrupting Andrew Hahn, I'm DJ Foster.
That's
thanks for listening.